What is the apologism about?
Mr. Kheto is attending another committee.
Is there another committee?
For the committee on police.
Are they meeting this morning?
I'm not sure, sir.
What is the other apology, Ms. Nelson? Can we request a letter to, in this case, Mr. Lachetcho, just to get clarity, what was the committee that was sitting this morning and why the committee, because if this is his priority, I understand, I think he's in two committees dealing with police and this, but if you can just follow that up for me. I will obviously also raise it with him, but let's just do it formal. Any other apologies? No. Silence, Mr. Yeah, I know he's not well, yeah. Yeah, he's sick, yeah. But I mean, like, he's consistent. It's just an issue of this week.
Yeah. If I can just make an apology also for the Director General. She's unfortunately involved in the select committee at the same time, and she tenders her apologies as well.
No problem.
Chair, did you get an apology from my colleague, George Bonama? No?
Okay, fine. So what I'm going to ask the secretary to do is just to, just to actually communicate to the members that the principle is they must inform the secretary. They don't even need to inform me because it's normal, like a technical process, and they need to advance the reasons. We obviously quite we understand if there's another committee that clash, but we don't understand if it happens every time. Then it becomes an issue. So let's do that, members. We are getting the responses today, and next week one will then actually go through the considerations of the actual bills, and in order for us to go through it line by line to pass it. But I do see the two members that really were pushing it for yesterday are not here. So we're not doing that today. We're actually getting the responses. You would recall that there was general agreement on all these submissions. I don't know what the department is saying. We're going to get the details now. But general, and then there were specific issues highlighted where people felt very strongly in their submissions that we need to consider, with the one area really raising a legal concern on the process if we so proceed. So over to you, as the Department of Higher Education is saying.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there is a document that has been made available, which is dealing with the responses. The methodology that was used is to take the summary that was provided by the Secretary in the document that was distributed yesterday, and just add the responses and also pick up on some of the issues raised in the public hearing of the day as well. The structure that we followed is therefore the structure that has been adopted in that document, the summary by the secretariat of this committee, and each comment were then slotted within the main focus area pertaining to the three different bills. Chair, the first issue or the first comment commentator that therefore on the document that has been distributed, this is the comments made by the teaching English to speakers of other languages. It's in relation to the Higher Education Laws Amendment Bill, in particular the issues around certificates and diplomas and the whole difficulty. It's almost, if you look at the written submission, it is dealing with a grievance around what is the process of registration for a learning program which seems to be not necessarily a qualification, and our SAQA is dealing with it. And in the hearing yesterday, it also came through that the issue is about short courses. Short courses, which is important to note that the NQF, which is the most recent piece of legislation, after a review period of almost 8 years, because of the difficult concepts and different weighing up of very important principles, it took quite a time to develop the National Qualification Framework Act as a consequence or a through flow from the old SAQA Act. That Act did not recognize short courses or unit standards. What that Act did was to acknowledge that this is a qualification framework, and that if a learning program that leads to a qualification, it's not the focus is not on the learning program anymore, but the learning program that leads to the qualification. It's a qualification framework, and the outcome must be a qualification. That is what is captured within the scope of that Act. But that Act also goes slightly further, and it provides for part qualifications. And that is the recognition that's been given to a learning program which falls short from a full qualification. That is value added because it forms part of a qualification, and on its own, it can add some value. This is a new concept that's been introduced, but it's still, there's no reference to anything such as the terminology used as short courses. If there is a short course that's offered, whatever the nature, whatever the substance, if it is registered on the NQF, either as a qualification or a part qualification, then the Act will be applicable and it will need to comply with the requirements of the Act. Here, the question must be asked, but why such a focus on qualification? Why can't we use these other words like short courses, learning programs, and so forth? The wisdom that came out of the deliberations in enacting the National Qualification Framework Act made it clear that the approach to market a learning program is on the basis of a qualification to learners which will enrich their life and provide a framework for a continuous learning structure. And therefore the focus moved to qualifications, which is an outcome which is internationally recognized with the advantages not only of standards, that also quality assurance attached to that. And that is why the focus is not on learning programs, not on anything other than what is classified, defined, and structured within this Act as a qualification or a part qualification. So the frustration, it seems to be, is that this commentator do not have a qualification or a part qualification, but wants to have the protection of the Act. And that is what's causing the difficulty. So I don't know if you want me to deal with all.
No, we're going to deal with this one. Thank you. Thanks, Advocate Bosser. Members, because.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Advocate. I echo your, well, it's not sentiments, your technical commentary, because I don't know if the Act must be altered to suit people or people must try to fit within the Act, because that's what it is. We're dealing with a particular set of circumstances, and the Act actually seeks to protect a whole lot beyond just one person. So for me, his qualifications, I mean his, I don't, it's not qualifications, but his short courses must lend themselves into the process of the Act. We cannot alter an Act to fit an individual. An individual must serve the Act, because the Act is there to protect more than just a set of short courses. I think that's really what I wanted to say.
Members, are we comfortable? I think so. What we are hearing is that it's more a issue of a provider or some of those providers that would be in that similar situation, but it doesn't impact on the our legislative process. Can I make a request to the Secretary as well as to Advocate Bosoff in this case, not in your responsibility but the communication back? Let this gentleman at least meet the relevant people in the department or in SACOR, and that we can get a report from that, not now in a day or two, but at least in October, of what was the progress in terms of that issue. So it's outside of the legislative process. So I hope that's been it. Can we move on?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next one is a submission which took a lot of discussion, and it's linked to what I've just put to the committee as the as my analysis of the National Qualification Framework Act. But it brings in two very important focuses. It brings in the concept of an extension to policy as a first very important focus of the submission, which has a according to the commentator has the impact that it nullifies the process and it cannot be entertained by this committee as part of this legislative process. And the second one is linked to the word offer and against the word provide and an analysis as to it, as both of those two words are used in the current legislation. Chair, it is important that when we look at the structure of the new statutory environment for the Minister of Higher Education and Training, then the NQF Act and the Skills Development Act, which has been assigned to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, together with the two traditional or three traditional educational institutional types that offer adult education. That's the Higher Education Act, which deals with university education. It is the Further Education and Training Colleges Act, and the ABET, or the Adult Education and Training Centers Act, Training Act. The one thing that's very striking of the Skills Development Act is that there is no formal structure other than accreditation of skills development providers. to deal with the very important issue of providing a skills provider that delivers this qualification in the sub-framework for trades and occupations. And in receiving the this later framework, it was one of the consequences that had to be clarified in order to deal with this issue of how do you deliver on a new qualification. Because as I indicated, the Act came into effect at a stage when the responsibility of the National Qualification Framework Act and the Skills Development Act have been transferred to the Minister of Higher Education and Training. The approach that we are taking in this legislation is to provide the interpretation and the technical alignment for your public and private higher and further education institutions to be able to deliver the qualification, the new qualification that is now labeled as trades and occupational qualifications. And that is the course of this whole debate. It's not an extension of policy, because foreign higher education institutions is currently part of the Higher Education Act. In Section 51, in the definition of a foreign juristic person, in Section 54, which is dealing with the registration requirements, is twice mentioned of foreign juristic persons. So it's not an extension. And foreign juristic persons is a concept which covers anyone, any entity, because it must be an entity to participate in a legal environment. And for a person other than a natural person, it can only be a person which has a legal entity, a legal personality. If it don't have that, then such an entity cannot participate in the normal legal environment. So, there have been a comment made yesterday that the Open University is not a legal entity. Or maybe I misread it. But if that's the case, and I haven't had a chance to research that, but if that's the case, then it would be a huge problem. According to our information, all universities have either been established in terms of their own piece of legislation, that's the traditional approach, especially in the European system, and all others that followed in other countries is in terms of specific legislation of that country, if it's a public institution, and if there's private institutions, then there's also a process of recognition or registration required in order to give them a specific status. Chair, the next thing, the current legislation requires any private provider, private institution, to be registered. And this is not just a provision in the Higher Education Act, but it follows from Section 29 of the Constitution, which gives the right to any person to establish an independent institution if, and there's two requirements, it's registered with the state, so that requirement is from the Constitution. And secondly, it is a requirement that that person must comply with standards that's comparable to a public institution. Here, it is the view of the department, and I've confirmed it yesterday with the minister again, that there's no deviation from any existing policies. It's been the framework from day one, as the constitution will not change from the interim constitution when it came to section 29, and it's always been the legislative framework of education, the old Department of Education, to comply with section 29 of the constitution. And therefore, it is a requirement that any person that acts to be an education institution, who is not by law a public institution in this country, must be registered with the state and must comply. So even if you're a reputable institution in another country, even if you've got all the standards in place, it is still a requirement of this country, and it's a constitutional principle that if you're not a public institution, you must be registered with the state. So another important aspect is that when we look at the concept of the current policy, the registration process required the legal entity as it is provided for in the Companies Act. The reason for that is because of the structure of a public institution, that there must be a governance body and also management structure within that entity. And that's similar to what you would find in a public institution. So it's compliance with the principle of Section 29, and it's also dealing with the requirements that is applicable to a public institution as provided by the Constitution. So it introduces the concept of financial security, which is an important issue in public institutions, and obviously it provides for a scrutiny of the standards and the outcome as a qualification that is reputable, recognized, and which is within a structured environment which is addressed to according to the needs of this country. And there's no differentiation between public or private when it comes to the accreditation of that program, and which is critical to the running of such institutions. So the fact that the legislation has been amended is not to strengthen those principles. What we've tried to do there is to use existing sections in the Act and make it clear that when we deal with the different qualifications on the different frameworks, sub-frameworks, because there's a new sub-framework. Skills and is within the sub-framework of trades and occupation. That sub-framework is now also acknowledged as a qualification which can be offered or provided, and I've used both words because both words are used in the Act. And I will deal with the issue of the difference between the two words later on. But both words were used in, not words, are used currently in the legislation. And the approach is not the extent, but is to clarify that there is no misunderstanding, that although the main focus of a higher education institution, public or private, is to deal with the sub-framework as contemplated in Section 7B of the National Qualifications Framework Act. But it also allows the flexibility, if this is approved by Parliament and signed off by the President, the flexibility that such institutions, which also now include public institutions, can offer skills qualifications if the minister authorizes. And the reason why It is a process of authorization of the minister is because of the development of this qualification, this occupational qualification, is in an implementation stage, in a transitional stage, and there's not 100% sign-off on policies relating to it as yet. But it is necessary to ensure that there will be providers, institutions, public institutions, that can do the work. That what's applicable to the public institutions covered under that Act must also follow through to the private institutions. And obviously, it will also include your foreign institutions. So, Chair, it is the department's view, there is no extension of policy. It's a technical amendment as a clarification to an existing framework that has been dealt with. And, Chair, just the last comment on it. It is also important that the example used by the commentator is the best example of the most reputed university operating across the world. Legislation is not there to deal with the best examples. Legislation is there to deal with the worst examples, to provide the standards to them, and to make sure that if it is adding a burden to your best example or your best equipped institution, then you know that they will be able to adapt to the new requirements. But it will refrain those weak institutions who cannot perform properly, not to mislead and abuse the system to act to the detriment of innocent and sometimes ignorant students. So that is how we see the legislation. It's not to deal with individual best examples, but rather to deal with the system as a whole. Chair, the next issue that has been raised is the difference of interpretation as to what is offer and what is provide. Chair, I'm not an English first language speaker, and I'm not an expert in the field, and unfortunately I didn't have enough time to deal with it, but I've made some inquiries. And I've also discussed it with some of the reputable legal minds. And it is also important to recognize that the Higher Education Act has been drafted by a legal team consisting of the current, he was at that stage a senior advocate, but he's currently a judge, Eberhard Bertelsmann. With him was Solly Sitoli, which is a leading advocate. And thirdly, it was Mr. Brendan Barry of the legal firm Cheadle & Thompson. And I've also been involved in that. But they were the leading partners in this development process and the advising to the white paper as well as the drafting of the legislation. Chair, during that process and even since it been enacted in 1997, the concept of provide versus offer has never been an issue. It's always been understood that any person who is involved in the delivery, the offering, the provisioning, whatever word you want to use, of education to a student that leads to a qualification, because that's always been the framework within which it's been cast. And the focus is on that of a qualification. And initially it was only a qualification. Then that will form part of the Higher Education Act. Later on, it became part of the National Qualifications Framework Act. And with the enactment in 2008 of that Act, it also introduced the concept of part qualification. So, Chair, we fail to acknowledge this technical differences between offer, which is based on demand and acceptance, while the other one is dealing more with abiding, which is a handing down within an institution. That's how I understood it, Chair. Maybe I've missed the point, but we could not understand the issue. What is important, and that is the point I want to make. I'm not an expert on the language, and someone else can maybe assist you there. That what I can inform you is that both words are used in the current legislation. And both those words are used in the same context with the same meaning attached to that. And that is the submission on that aspect. Chair, it is our view that there's not a deviation from policy, there's no extension of policy, and it is a clarification that is absolutely required as a result of the legislation being transferred to identify the offering, the provisioning, the delivery, whatever one call it, of qualifications in the different sub-frameworks within public institutions and private institutions. Yeah, that's in a nutshell on the response of the department.
Thank you, Advocate. So the issue is this a red herring in terms of that particular with one, two. We are sitting already with existing the policy, and is already supposed to, if you do come into the South African space, you in any case have to comply. That's there. Why therefore is there a need to raise this issue again, and if it is administrative as it was honed in yesterday, is it supposed to be dealt with here, or should we actually have an engagement, a very direct engagement with the department, and create an understanding of what is the bottlenecks when it comes to registration at SACWA and other related matters? Those are the type of issues I think the gentleman of Higher Education South Africa, the registrar, made a suggestion in terms of word change, and I'm seeing the department is quite happy with that better clarification. So it's something that we obviously would also be able to take up. But I'm noting two hands. Dr. James and then Member Kizer.
Thank you, Chair. I agree that all institutions must be part of our system, and that you can't have an exception for foreign providers. And it is also an opportunity to make sure that what is being offered here by foreign providers is of a standard that we are happy with. So that's not an issue. I just wanted to say that UAMO is a small thing. He's the registrar at the University of Cape Town. So he's the head of the administration of the university. He's not a professor, he's Mr. Okay. He's the phrase that he suggests, I think that's fabulous, to deal with that particular issue of language and nomenclature and being specific. The two things I worry about this is that I think this legislation might be unenforceable. That is, that looks fine, but the question is how are you going to enforce it? Because the people you would catch is the wrong word, the people you would identify, the providers you would identify, may just be the credible ones. Because they would come forward, they would register, they would do it. It's the ones that are not credible. It's like immigration, you know? Applying immigration laws, there are people who evade those laws by definition. So the enforceability of it is an issue. So I don't quarrel with the legislation here, but the enforceability is an issue. And the second is that and this is also not to do with the legislation, is the speed with which SACWA acts. So it takes a long time. I don't know what the speed of the machinery is for approvals. And it may be that that's an issue that we should raise with SACWA directly. It's not to do with this. Do they register qualifications speedily? Are they responsive to the issue? is a rhetorical question. My impression is no. And if that's the case, then we must raise it for them.
I think it's not an impression. The issue is there is a problem, it seems to me. And that's what I'm saying. Administratively, if there is a problem in terms of registration process and the pipeline of implementation, that's obviously an area that this committee must try and help the public and organizations with. So I think it's something that I surely would want the committee to actually deal with, obviously outside of the ambit, yeah.
But it's sorry for you to be on technology, terminology, but it is important that the registration of your private providers are with the department. The department deals with that, but the accreditation of the program, and it can be more than one program, is dependent. It's a very important component, actually, of that registration process, and that is the role of the SAQWA. But SAQWA, with the new intervention of the National Qualifications Framework Act, is doing it with the assistance of the QCs, the quality councils. And I think the issues around the system as a whole is one of the aspects that will be focused on also, not necessarily as the same focus as we've had with that 8-year review of the NQF, but it will definitely be focused on in the future policy and the current developments in developing of new policies and legislation.
Member Kuzo.
Thank you, Chair. It's a feeling of deja vu to be talking about this act today. Just allow me a second of immodesty, because I was one of the drafters of the green and white papers on higher education before it was legislated. So that was
excellent job.
So there is a little bit of, and you may or may not remember, advocate, but that's what it was. I just want to invoke some memories here of about 5 to 7 years ago, where some of the universities that were particularly offering MBAs were closed, and people that were having those qualifications, such qualifications were repealed, and as such, they had to flee. A lot of the MBAs, so there were institutions that were offering fly-by-night kind of MBAs over spending 2 years and 3 years and all of those. So I think in a sense, I just approach this with that kind of baggage, if you like, and maybe not being quite hospitable to the Independent Institute of Educators. I take the point about what Dr. James is saying about process management rather than what the Act intends to do and not to do. But also I think that the issue is about lowering barriers to access by the international providers in South Africa. And I think that that can be done in terms of process management rather than compromising the sanctity of the legislation per se. So there's a difference between unlocking the value inside within the locus of the Act rather than tampering with the Act. I don't think that in South Africa we can tamper with the Act only to accommodate or only to compromise what we offer or we provide. And I think that it's a question of persuasion through fear tactic. If the reason for such a persuasion by Independent Institute of Education is that we are then isolating South African higher education from the rest of the world, I don't buy that. And I agree with the advocate that there isn't a way that, I mean, I do not know, but surely an open university, it has got global footprint. But I'll be damned if that's not a legal entity. I'll be damned if that is not a foreign juristic person. I do not understand a university that can give diplomas and certificates, and those are not within the locus of the law. So for me, I will, on behalf of South Africa, my country, jealously guard the sanctity of the legislation of this country, but also I will be the one to say, as Dr. James is saying, unlock the value through easing up the process, the management of the process as such. I think that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Agreements? No, but remember, she was not in, there was no Coke when she was actually part of drafting that. Oh, you're in green now. You're crossing floor now. I think what we are saying is that we stick to the suggested draft, that the issues raised and around that process is more the administrative and the implementation part and the how part, as you said. It's not the principle. I think that's just what the legal person said yesterday, the presenter. It's not the principle. It is the how, and their concerns that it's not being dealt with speedily where applicable. So that must be dealt with outside of that space, of this space. So I think that's the first thing that we're saying there. Secondly, as members come through, obviously we'll deal with it because the department then will now reposition that wording. As suggested by the representative of HESA, can we comfortable with a more clarified version? If you look at the department's document under departmental responses of IEE, it's not numbered here, but it's the first, second, third, fourth page at the bottom. The department is saying, during the discussions in the hearing, the terminology used in clause 3, concerns were raised about the wording diploma and certificates. Professor Amour then suggested the following wording: no person may offer, award, or confer a degree or a higher education diploma or a higher education certificate as contemplated in the HEQF unless such. Then they just say the proposal of the professor is an improvement of the current wording of the clause. So are we comfortable that it also deal with that? Because I think that's what even the department and ourselves yesterday indicated. Because what we're now going to obviously do is, next week if we then consider, that wording just needs to be inserted. The old wording will be there and then just the insertion to show the distinction. Are we comfortable? Okay. Thank you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next issue is dealing with the Skills Development Levies Bill. Chair, this is a submission of a student to feel more aggrieved about the impact of the benefits of a learnership than making any substantial contributions as to the structure or language used in the bills. Chair, I don't think we need to respond any more than that.
Chair, I'm noting that this is not a matter for the legislation, but I would appeal that the department looks at this matter. Because as far as I know, the minimum stipend for learnership is not 720. That's one of the issues. But it says that we need to get somebody to attend to this matter and just hear them out. We can't ignore it. Just come to our exposure. Because I know in terms of CITAS and what is required is about 1.5. That's one. But the issues of just managing the learnership from the Premier's office. So I think that we just appeal with the department to send it to the relevant person to deal with this and report back to the committee.
Agreed. So we can move on.
Chair, the next bill is that of the education laws, higher education and training laws amendment bill. The other submissions were focusing more on this bill. The first one that we are looking at is that of the Adult Learning Network. Chair, their submission is basically dealing with one aspect, and that is to deal with an extension to the scope of responsibilities assigned to your public and private adult learning centers. It is a structure within the current legislation that your general phase, which is that in level one, those qualifications are the responsibility of the institutions within the Adult Education and Training Act. Then on levels 2 to 4, it is the responsibility of the institutions, or the responsibilities of the institutions as is reflected or referred to in the Further Education and Training Colleges Act. And then obviously from 5 to 10, it is the educational qualifications that are applicable to higher education institutions. To extend it, the level from 1 right up to level 4 would provide a severe policy change with a lot of implications on capacity to that institution, and will also at this point in time create more uncertainty, although they might have the power, that they are really at the moment, it's one of the areas where there is the focus on level one is a very critical focus. It's very important that the general phase must be dealt with by a dedicated institution, and to extend and take the focus and divide it to an area which is already covered by another dedicated education institution might not be a solution to the problem. So it is not that the department feels that there is not merit in the problem, and the department is obviously taking it very seriously and will be one of the key discussion areas of the policy debate which is going on the rest of this week and also next week in the two summits that you've already alluded to. And it will definitely be part of future policy and legislative framework. But here, the consequential amendments to such a deviation from the existing policy position needs to be dealt with in its totality, looking at all the foreseen and unforeseen consequences, and be dealt with at that point in time. To do it at this point in time can not resolve the problem. That will only add to the difficulty. Chair, and then lastly, the intention is to actually simplify the legislation so that the policy debate can be easily addressed by all the role players so that they can understand exactly who's taking responsibility for what. And that is the purpose of this current legislative program. It's technical in nature, and there is no policy of the new Department of Higher Education and Training that we even can use as a crutch to try and accommodate or anticipate some of the foreseen or unforeseen circumstances. There is no finality to the policy, and therefore it is the view that at this point in time it is not supported by the department.
Members, any responses? Member Kubai.
Thanks, Chair. I'm trying best not to talk, but I was hoping that I would keep quiet so that I spare my voice and my coffee. I just wanted to understand I couldn't get from the department if there's an issue serious on the changes between ABET and basic education. I think when I read the submission, the person who submitted Mr. Mukun, part of the issues was that they don't even think that this program is allocated to the right department. The feeling was that it needs to be at basic education so that it can be dealt with, and I think it went extensively to that. But I just wanted to understand if there's really a substantive issue on the issue between removal of the basic part, the ABET and the AET. If there's, because I think that's where the commentator started with, in terms of just clarity on those issues, on those two things. But the second thing, Chair, I'm not sure if it's correct to say the legislation that we will not be able to deliver if we are to do that already, unless we are talking about applicability of the legislation. But we can't look, I might be wrong, but I'm just feeling that where I'm sitting. The comments from the department saying that you can't go to that extent because it will be difficult to deliver, because centers today are having difficulties of delivering because of capacity. I don't think that should be the approach in dealing with legislation, when we deal with legislation. Because if it's an issue of resources, therefore we must go and deal with it somewhere else. But in terms of legislation, you can't look at to say we don't have capacity. Can capacity be created? Because that would be the argument. To say if the basis of you not agreeing to this is because you don't have capacity, therefore it's a different debate. But I think we should look if the challenge is applicability of that legislation, that it won't be able to be implemented, not because of capacity, but because of other things, maybe being challenged on other things. So that's where I wanted my discomfort on just the response from the department. Thank you.
Yeah, I apologize for creating the impression that it is about the capacity in the sense of the inability in the sense of the lack of capacity as the main drive. I just use that as an example to show the complexities that might develop. And if you don't have a thorough policy framework to deal with those complexities in advance, for people to understand what would be the changes to the legislation, it can be a problem. And that's why we say that it is better to deal with it once we've got a thorough policy position on the table, dealing with the consequences, dealing with capacity issues, dealing with the transitional state aspects relating to whatever the new policy might be, rather than to first then act, provide a power which currently there is a vacuum as to how that would be dealt with. There is no policy to guide it, to provide the framework for implementation, or the clarity as how this new power, this extended power, will be used by the centers the next day after the Act comes into effect. So, Chair, it is the issue of capacity, the issue of where it should be situated. The department is not against the review of that and looking at it thoroughly and taking this comment very, very seriously. But it is just the point we are putting is just not possible to accommodate it with this technical amendments at this point in time due to realities.
On the same issue, are we saying that in terms of ABET, we don't have current policy that is guiding ABET? That's what I want to know. Currently, as we're sitting. What is, because I'm not getting truly in terms of what is the real issue here. I know that the department is going for technical amendments, but if the reality that we are faced with is not technical amendments, we've got to deal with it. And since my argument has always been that we can't sit with a policy or a legislation and go through an expensive process as a committee for technical amendments if there is a need for policy shift and policy changes. I don't think that we should stick to the... That's my view, Chair, as a person in this committee, that you can't sit with a loophole in legislation and have it opened for technicalities and then therefore say later, when is later going to be? When what has happened in terms of just changing the issues? If the reality that we are faced with is that we need policy shift, let's do it.
Yeah, Chair, the department is addressing the policy issue. To clarify, as I already indicated, there is a lot of movement on that area. The appeal that the department put to the committee is to wait for the policy and let the legislation be informed by the policy. And the committee got a huge responsibility in oversight when the policy is developed and approved by the minister. But, Chair, through you, it is important that one do not develop legislation on the roof, that you deal with legislation by taking full consequences of the foreseen and unforeseen consequences, and that it is considered within the totality of the structure. And the only thing we put on the table is there's no difference of opinion as to the urgency, the need for good policies, the understanding of how the system as a whole in higher education and training need to be developed. That is critical. And the legislation should follow the policy, which will be the line of instruction which is needed not only for the implementation of the legislation, but also provide to the outside world the insight as to how this specific policy framework linked with the legislation supporting it will be implemented, and they can hold the department and the minister accountable within that framework. Without such policy, it is very difficult to deal with legislative amendments of a substantive nature.
No one else in this matter? Member McCausland? Dr. James?
I just wanted to raise the question of the definition of an educator and the professionalization. The general point is that I don't think anybody here would be happy with sending our kids to schools where the teachers are not qualified. Well, I don't think anybody will get onto a plane here if you don't know that the pilot is not qualified to fly the plane. So that's really quite important. I know there are people who are teachers, excellent teachers, with no qualifications at all. But when we're dealing with public institutions, it's unacceptable to have a definition like we have at present. Now, you say here that, well, that's a general issue. That definition pops up everywhere else. But I don't think we can hide behind that. So there has to be a process to look at this question again. If you want to leave it as it is for now, that simply postpones the issue. But it's quite a fundamental point, I think.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the content of the definitions and also any of the other provisions which impact on the employment of any person, it's always very, very important that one must acknowledge that the system is already in place, and by changing a definition, you might affect the security attached to specific individuals unless there is a proper reason, research and policy underpinning it. So, The language used in that definition is not cast in stone and will definitely be one of the important issues to consider. It might be that the concept of calling this teacher, lecturer, educator, trainer, whatever one want to call this individual, but as the Honourable Member indicated yesterday, it is important that the learning process must take place in a structured learning environment, that there must be standards and there must be some structure. Now, the fact that the definition can be criticized, one must also remember that there is the controlling factor of the South African Council for Educators, which got a responsibility to look at the standards applicable to an educator. And it is important that your educators must also be registered with that structure. That legislation is not amended, and it's still applicable to educators. So even if there is a deviation from the normal standard, because for whatever practical reason, and you do find that even in the school system, with a very strict structure as to what is the requirement to be registered as an educator, that due to specific good sound reason, there might be a deviation because of the nature as it is provided for. And it's usually also linked to conditions in order to address whatever the shortcoming. So, Chair, the point I would try to make is that there's no problem to deal with this as a very important aspect. The difficulty would be to deal with it now, and that is where we say it is not the best place, because we are dealing with employment issues. This is a definition which will have an impact, even with the slightest amendment to it, on employment situation. It is a very, it's the bread and butter on somebody's table we are talking about, and therefore one must be very mindful when we deal with it, that we deal with it taking account of all the relevant facts, and provide a structure which also deals with the transitional into whatever the new position might be. Chair, the other aspect around the SAES, the Council of Educators, it's just to draw the attention of the members to the fact that even as a result of the definition as it is there, there is another layer also as a body which is basically governed by the professionals to ensure that they protect the professional integrity of those professionals.
Just a follow-up question. I'll be very direct. You would not have a definition of somebody being a lawyer or an attorney for somebody who practices law out there. Anybody, right? So, including a kangaroo court. So why do we want to do it for education? I don't understand. I do not understand. I mean, I understand all the reasons you're giving, but we entrust the education of this nation's children to people who must be qualified. Now, there's a way of dealing with the employment side is that all new appointments must adhere to this definition. All existing appointments clearly can't be terminated on the basis of it. So I'm really worried about this, because we are treating, we say with our one side of our mouth that education is important, and on the other side of our mouth we do things that suggest that it really doesn't matter all that much.
The next person, Honourable Member McGuzzin.
Actually, Chair, I wanted to make an input and also ask a question to the portfolio committee, because we've just had Mr. Boss of EAS around the issue of the adult education, that there is no clear policy in terms of transition. And I'm asking myself as the portfolio committee, what are we saying about that? Are we going to continue and actually complete this this bill with pending areas, what are we going to say? Are we, do we have to sit down as a portfolio committee and say how are we going to rectify this or what? Because I feel it will be unfair for us, Chairperson and honourable members. Our term is 5 years, and we have to complete what we have been elected for. So we cannot, more especially on this area. And from different political parties, we know this is the core of politics in terms of education. Thanks.
I think that's a question that we should just internally grapple with just now, because it's a question of are we in fact highlighting this as a strategic issue and therefore saying let's get into a deep engagement, understanding that the department in terms of its traditional process is not ready, or that they are busy with a deeper process on policy shift, and hence therefore should we then deal with the technicality now and then come back later, or should we in fact put it all into one? I think that's a question for us. It's not a question in this case for the department necessarily to respond, and we're going to allow people to speak to that just after this. Member Mishwana?
Thank you, Chairperson. I did not necessarily want to speak to what you have proposed. I wanted us to check the implications, because all along there was an outcry, unless if I got it wrongly, that basic education, like if it's, I want to go back to the terminology, basic education, if it's given to an adult, may not necessarily include skills. And the argument that some of us were waging is that it's important that skills be given to an adult so that they must be able to go and use them. Now, because we did not talk of positions that may suit, I'm not sure whether suit individuals or groups, the issue is that we need skills, and it must be covered by law, that if you are an adult, you can be skilled without being dealt as somebody who needs basic you need skills, actually. And now my argument is, what is wrong with AET? Because I think AET would cover it better than basic. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, it is a very important question, because it is important, if one look at the current framework, your skills and occupations, your trade and occupation qualifications, is running from level 1 right up to level 10. So therefore, clearly, there is scope to focus and say, deal with it as occupation qualifications. There is scope to deal with it as education qualifications. And here, what I tried to say earlier on is, obviously, there are policies in place under the old Department of Education that came over to this new Department of Higher Education and Training, but there's no overarching new policy which actually clarify where would be the best position to deal with this training as a combination, as a single sub-framework. Where would be the best place to fit it in? And Chair, it also links, and maybe I did not respond to the earlier question of this commentator, the Adult Learning Network, on where, is it rightly placed with this department, or should it be under basic education? Chair, the word basic is used in the concept, and is the name of the Department of Basic Education. But if you look at the mandate that the president the different departments, is to say basic education, you deal with school education. It's a very important sector. It's a massive system. Deal with it. Give it the rightful focus and ensure that there's proper delivery. Minister of Higher Education and Training, you deal with adult education outside school. And that is where your adult education and training, and it is not that it is a change to say adult cannot be within level 1 right up to level 10, or adult you are, as the commentator, the presenter yesterday indicated, there's a perception that adult is that of old persons, and it should rather be young, community focused. So there's a lot of issues that needs to be looked into. What we are saying is that at this point in time, the policies that's currently in existence does not address all these critical issues. It's a need to be reviewed, and let's get that process and focus on it with the vigor it needs, get that in place, and then the legislation can follow suit.
Thank you, members. I think the question here is, it's clear that members are not too comforted currently with the fact that there is the change. We are being called upon on a technical change, but that there is even concerns about the transitional process in terms of the way that policy directive will happen. Therefore, should we continue with this particular section? And what is the implication of leaving that as is and then wait the deeper process? What would be that implication, Advocate Bossa? Advocate, just in terms of the existing legislation, what would be the implication? Meaning, if it's an area of critical focus, as you're hearing the committee raise, your concern is there's not a substantial discussion on it, not necessarily here now, but even in the department. And if we therefore are saying, let's then have that substantial discussion and come back with the, meaning let's have the department to actually look into this, bring up the critical issues, and that obviously then means a time delay in terms of this particular one. If that is the case, what is the implication to leave then as it's already stated in the existing legislation?
The legislative position will remain exactly the same. However, the implementation and the understanding in the debate that follows within the policy-making process can be assisted by cleaning up the legislation in order to make it clear as to the references in the legislation. Who's taking responsibility for what? So that there is no misunderstanding. And you don't waste a lot of time by explaining. Go back to Proclamation 44. Look at Proclamation 56. This is an act which is primarily within the ambit of the Minister of Basic Education. But because of the exception, you've got a right. Yeah, it's very complex to deal with it in a very important debate and clarify these issues. While with this process, it cleans out that technical issues. And if that's raised, you give them the amendments and say, there you are. You give them a printout of the Utah Stat, which incorporate it into the legislation. And you focus on the real debate and not to clarify the position. And that's the value of this process, Chair. But legally, there's no change. The current legislation is still in place. It's dealing with the current framework as is.
and there's no deviation from it. It's technical amendment as we put it to the committee.
Member Lucusa.
Thank you, Chair. I'm listening to the conversation, and I'm just wanting to add my own voice, because I think that in terms of departmental outputs, I think that the department is delivering on the technical side. But I think what we are saying is that there is a whole lot, the body of this remains something of a concern. And because I was one of the people who actually did not think that we needed public hearings on these definitions and so on. However, a lot of issues came out from the same process. So for me, it could very well be technical definitions, but the reason there is a need to change those definitions means such definitions must of necessity impact on the body of that legislation. So I think that I take the point that the advocate is saying that such a process is following, but I think that it must then be red flagged that there are concerns around the body of the legislation, because the reason you change the definitions is because they mean something, and surely the body must be in alignment with those definitions. So I think that somewhere, somehow, we shouldn't have definitions that are far too removed from the body of the legislation. The legislative output has been delivered or is being delivered through this process, but there's need for the substantive one.
Members, what I'm now going to ask is that you actually then help to advise on how to, in fact, what is the proposals of how to take this particular issue forward.
Chair, I want to say that I'm discomfortable to proceed with this section in the way it is, in light of the concerns that are raised. I understand what they're raising. I mean, from my side, I'm really uncomfortable. I would prefer that we agree that this section be set aside and not proceed with it the way it is.
You say the section, this particular one, or the actual... Not the bowl.
Sorry?
Not the bowl in its totality on this one, but this particular...
Yeah, I would want us to, especially on the added part, I'm not comfortable to proceed, Chair. Okay. Unless if they can, I'm not sure they'll have to respond, but I'm saying the part of added. Hence, I started with my comments earlier. I'm one of those that I thought that would. I felt that the opportunity was presented to us to deal with the bill in totality and review the bill. I felt that way from the beginning. I felt that it's a waste of our time to sit and do technicality, literally, as members of parliament, than to amend the bill and make sure that whatever the context and what we are talking about is in place. Hence, I raised the issue of saying that where is the issue? Are we saying there's no policy? I mean, if you look from the previous, the issue of Abbott has never been prioritized in this government. And we can't continue like that. If we have an opportunity for us to change it, we've got to do it. And this is where I'm standing, Chair. To say if we are to proceed with legislation the way it is, we do those changes, this part falls off.
Anyone else in this matter?
Agreed, Chair. I support the motion.
So, Advocate, what we're arguing to suggest is that you just consider, in fact, most probably want to do directly respond on that. If that part, in fact, it's not then being dealt with, and there's a process next week. Either we say, for example, this is therefore our suggested route that we'll be following. Is there any response on you on that?
Yeah, I don't think I can take the matter forward further, because the position we are putting is that there is support for focusing on it. The only advantage in dealing with it in this fashion is to get clean up the legislation to make the conversation easier. If the committee feels that is not a real issue, then clearly, as I understood the members correctly, It is just an appeal of those clauses dealing with the ABET Act that is under discussion, and then the rest can continue within that structure. Chair, I would obviously give you my Director General in this regard, and it would be better if we can report back on the next session with this committee, as I don't have any mandates from the Minister.
The last person, and then I want to move on.
Thank you, Chair. I, again, am listening. My persuasion would be not to see this process go to waste. Let's bank the process rather than set it aside as though it did not happen. I don't know if that makes material sense, because a lot of good has gone into the process. So if we are in agreement with the way we should go, that's fine. But let's bank the process and everything in it, because a lot has gone already, rather than, you know what I'm saying. So let's bank the process.
If you say bank the process, you mean let's deal with it then and try. Not necessarily today, but I'm saying use the process, unbundle what's being suggested and the concerns being raised, and go through the process. And then whether that is a more substantial process or not, but then go through that process.
I'm saying let's not lose the gains that have been made in the past 2 days of the engagement. Let's have them down, and then we can put, when we say set aside, it does not mean undoing what has happened, but rather holding on to the gains of the process, bank it, and then we can go the other route. Is that difficult? I am suggesting that the work of these past 2 days is not undone or done away with.
Agreed. That's agreed.
That the gains that have been made are banked. In other words, you put them aside as something of value because we have worked through them and then follow the other process.
Yeah.
But let's bank the gains of this process
because
we have invested in this process.
In fact, there must be a suggested process even the next week on how we're actually going to deal with this particular issue. Because what I'm hearing is there's a concern, the way I understood members saying, that, and it's possibly a refrain that we are picking up, whether it's ABET or RPL or this or that vulnerable sector of our society, that we're all having it in the legislation, but we're not always seeing it in the action and how it comes to the fore. And what I'm hearing is, we've now had the benefit of very substantial discussions and input from Section 21s and whoever else. Let's take that into a serious consideration. Let's then chart a way on how we, for example, will deal with this in the context that it actually deserves a proper justification. So I'm hearing similar voices from yourself and Member Kubai in this particular context. And then it's just the question of how do we then technically deal or set aside or actually strengthen that particular section. And do we strengthen it now, or do we, for example, actually say no? We now want to go through a deeper process, and this is the 6 months process that we are highlighting. It's that type of consideration to be done by ourselves and next week. So, can we proceed from this point? I also think it would be helpful if the department has heard some of the issues. Most probably, one of the questions I think that we are hearing is there a, this in the transition process, what is actually the policy directives? What is actually happening in the section? It would be good if we be incapacitated next week. On any of that, understanding this is not your domain of operation, and therefore I thought of giving you the opportunity just to, most probably there's things that we should know that can give us more comfort or even more discomfort, and then we want to deal with it in that way.
Thank you, Chair. We will definitely do it, and you're absolutely correct. I'm not the person to deal with it, but we will get someone to assist the committee next week.
Good. Can we then? So members, I think what we are saying, this is an area that we're not comfortable with, and that there is a view expressed, but that next week, the department, we are giving the department the benefit to, in a sense, come and tell us what is that debate currently and the type of issues that's been raised in this. You have the issues, Advocate Bosses. Okay. We're going over to?
The next one is the Ikasi development projects. The submission is dealing with issues more in principle than really dealing with the substance of the legislation. It is actually, it could have been linked more to the higher education laws amendment act, because it is linking it more to the university, the amendments to the higher education act, and not to the act of the bill that we are currently discussing. But we've kept it in the format as it is summarized in that document that we received from the Secretariat. The issues that this submission addressed is, first of all, they support the notion of dealing with the concept of companies, in stricter environment when it comes to your private providers in higher education. Chair, obviously the current legislation already dealt with that principles. The fact that there might be some cases in the Johannesburg Braamfontein Pretoria area is not actually put on the table. It's more a generic comment that's been made. But what is important is that once again, it's a management issue. It's linked to the structure of dealing with what you, as chairperson, already summarized as the bottleneck, which need to be looked into and maybe have that broader discussion with Umalusi and the QCs. It's related to that same thing. So the commentator also touched on the issue of the NSFAS, which is more comment in support that it must deal with the bursaries, but also linked to the unskilled people in the FET colleges. That act has been amended in order to include the students of FET colleges. So it is in alliance with what he suggested. That came about in 2008 and the end of 2008, and there's already movement on that. Chair, he also addresses the issue of Section 26G in the Skills Development Act, and it's a matter of clarification, Chair. I think the committee have been briefed on what is the need for it. It's once again a technical amendment which is required in order to align the legislation with one another, as the language used in the National Qualifications Framework Act is that of a chief executive officer, the skills development executive officer, and it's just a matter of aligning.
I think that's it. Members, the bottom line is it was affirming most of the issues that the bill suggested, and it then just went into some of the managerial and implementation issues. Are we comfortable that we can continue and that there's no any need to have any deep discussion on this one?
Okay.
Yes, Chairperson, I would agree with you. But I'm checking bullets 1 and 3 under 3.2. To me, the way these two are structured, they may have more than 3 meanings. The first one, why should we have but are concerned, worried about what says? It says that concerned, worried. No stroke about it. Can you, number one, it supports section 51. I'm sure you see that sentence, right? And then comma, but are concerned, worried.
Oh, it's just typo from the researcher that has put it up.
Yeah, because the way it is, the way it is, it can mean a lot of things. It depends on where you want to put the comma.
Yeah, okay.
And then the third one also proposes that national, the MQF, be reviewed because institutions seem not to understand the MQF. And also government departments, when they require entrance, they do not recognize.
I think what has happened is, remember the first part is where they literally take what the individual said, and they just made a synopsis out of that, of what, say, the commentators has presented, not necessarily orally, but also in writing. So that's that part. Then there's another part that speaks to the responses. So if I would understand correctly, in this case of the ICASA development projects, whatever you've seen under 3.2, right up to before the departmental response, it's in a sense just taken over as is from the submissions made. That's what has happened there. Right? So it is not the interpretation either of the committee or parliament or the interpretation of the department in this. It is a person that has written in the submission. Okay, so can we proceed, members? I'm going to, unless I read the committee wrong and the department wrong, the next one, Mr. Mbara, the essential issue related to ABET, he argued that ABET must actually be ABET, and it rather should rest with the Department of Basic Education then. That's one, and then secondly, that's essentially that was the main thing, and obviously in the debate yesterday there was contradictions of even in the submission, and one or two of our members tried to clarify and actually just gave a little bit of advice and support to the presenter. Is there anything of substantial? Should we can we in a sense understand that there's not going to be any changes that we none of us are saying that it should actually go back to basic education that. Members, fine. Then Dr. Mabuzela, in fact, this is I would allow you to speak to this matter.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Umalusi is obviously a very important role player, and one must always take the advice seriously. But, Chair, it is also important to acknowledge that in their presentation they've got general comments, which is more reflective of a future process, and then follow up by specific ones. Chair, we've tried to also deal with some of the general issues, and I think we've already discussed many of those this morning, and the other issues. The extension of scope, which we've discussed earlier on, is also one of the issues that Umalusi is raising. And Chair, it is a very interesting argument to want to extend into a higher level than what the current legislation allows. Chair, there is flexibility in the current legislation to say if there's a need, the FET College can move into qualifications that are registered on the NQF level 5, but it must be dealt with within the cooperation and within the structure of
the higher education institution. Chair, the reason for that provision is, first of all, you've got a funding structure which is allocating the program grants to the institutions based on qualifications within the statutory responsibility of that institution. If you give higher education programs to be dealt with by FET institutions, then it's either leading to what they call a double dipping, because both of them are getting money for it, because they registered both as students, or it is a situation that you offer the program, you don't have the money to deal with it, because the function, the statutory function, is with another statutory entity, and the normal principles, funds follow function. So there's a lot of difficulty, and that's why the legislature, in the current legislation, said, well, there is a need to deal with this, but you deal within the corporation, and it falls under the ambit of the institution that is by law identified as the entity to deal with that type of qualifications. To just extend it by way it is put here, it's not clear. This is talking about the whole layer of qualifications within that NQF level. Is it only referring to that one or two qualifications? If it is a split within a level, how do you do it? Because it's not within the structure of the NQF. The NQF is based on level descriptors which differentiate your qualifications and place them within a specific level. And when it comes to educational qualifications, the split is within but between different layers. And if one move away from that, it is a severe policy implication, and there's a lot of consequences to it. As I said, it is financial consequences. There are students in pipeline, there's institutions, there's lecturers that might be affected. There's a whole array of possibilities flowing out of that. Yeah, that's on the general aspect of it. The other one that they actually put it also under the specific one, but it got the same implication, and that is in the amendment to section 43 of the FET Colleges Act, the reference to the institutions to offer trade and occupational qualifications as quality controlled by the QCTO, and they also want to be included as part of that. Now, Chair, once again, the whole structure of the NQF is to bring legal certainty, because you must compare a application for an educational qualification against the standard that is applicable in a comparable public institution in order to comply with Section 29. You can't have two authorities with the same responsibility, because which standard will now be the standard that you use in order to deal with that evaluation of the comparability? If you deal with the process of the QC of the NQF, is to say there's three distinctive sub-frameworks. Each framework will have their own QC, their own quality council to deal with it. And to deal with it by way of their proposal is therefore becoming also a huge extension to the policy position, and needs to be thrust through before one can really give effect to that. So, Chair, it is definitely an issue which is going to be focused on
in the summit the end of this week, and I know it was part of the agenda for that discussion, but the complexities obviously needs to be dealt with. Chair, on the specific comments, Chair, it is important that the first issue that they raise is that of the approach in the bill in section, or it is an introduction of a new section 41, capital C, small f. It's reflected as a big F, but it should be a small f. And the reference there is to the development of policy. And the reference there is to integrated approach to adult education and training. And they don't say it is wrong, but they suggest it might be a typo, as it most probably can also be a further education and training within that environment. Chair, the reason why the word adult education was used in the legislation is because of the need, when it comes to policy, to put the broader perspective when it comes to adult education, so that one can deal with it in the broader perspective. And you, if it colleges are critically situated between your ABET centers, your skills, because they are, it is foreseen that they will play a major role in the skills qualifications as well, and it is a link to the higher education institutions as well. And the need to look at the broader perspective when it comes to the policy determination is why the proposal of the minister's side is to link it to adult education as a whole, which is the mandate of the minister when it comes to the division between the Minister of Higher Education and the Minister Higher Education and Training and the Minister of Basic Education, as to their functions, statutory functions, as was transferred to by the President. So, Chair, the word adult is not a mistake in this case. It was intended to be like that in order to provide a broader perspective. Chair, the next issue that I raised is that of the colleges must apply to the QCTO as well as to Umalusi. I've dealt with that comment already, Chair. Then they raise additional issues which are not part of the bill. It's part of the current legislation, issues on liability. Chair, it is good advice that I try to give, but it's not really of substance and relevance to the process here. And Chair, on the ABET, they welcome the fact that it is included into one piece of legislation, and that they also propose that there should be an extension to the functions of the governing body to include a academic structure or academic board. Chair, once again, the approach is that it's good advice, but it is for future processes. And I've obviously got the hindsight now of our discussion, the discussion of this committee in this morning session, which is obviously also relevant to this. But Chair, on the part of the department, it is important issues that must be looked into, but it is not part of the current technical amendments as is proposed.
as are those amendments that are proposed by the minister as part of this bill. Chair, the one aspect that one must agree to in their proposal is that in the amendment to section 43, the current bill is referring to the sub-framework of further education and training. Yeah, there is no such a framework, and it must be reworded. And in our responses, we suggested a reformulation to say that it is applicable to qualifications within the sub-framework for general and further education and training as contemplated in Section 7A of the National Qualifications Framework Act. Just to clarify that aspect, and it is definitely an improvement. They are absolutely correct that there is a problem with the current wording. That's in a nutshell the issues that they raise, and it is the view of the department is that they are actually quite supportive, although they've raised two critical issues. Both of them for future consideration. The one is the review of where the demarcation of the responsibility should be when it comes to NQF level 5 and how to deal with that, and then also dealing with the issues of the broader policy framework and how that interaction between QCs can be sorted out. Chair, it is also important to note that within the current structure of the NQF, that SAQWA is responsible to deal with a framework of collaboration between the different QCs, SAQWA and the department. There is a NQF forum established under the chairpersonship of the Director General, and where all the structures are working into in order to implement that important responsibility placed by the NQF. And this aspect is one of the issues that's currently on the agenda of that forum to provide clarity on that as well.
No, thank you. Members, so essentially there is a view that most of the suggestions by this entity relates to the deeper issues and whether those things will be discussed with in our process and then a suggested way next week. Alternatively, whether we say we are continuing with just with the technical one and then deal with all those things in a substantial way, that's obviously still open, but most of those things relate to how to actually reorganize that section. Then the one issue that the department is agreeing with is just that particular in the last page, second to last page, around the rewording of what they've also identified. Any inputs from our members?
I would simply say that I agree with the department's response to Umalusi.
Okay, so what we are, we then, again in the draft legislation for consideration, that one section, that the better wording, and obviously then the decision to be taken around what do we do with it, is it substantial, are we leaving it as it is, are we taking it out, are we, that's the bigger discussion in terms of. Lucy gave some good pointers around that futuristic process. I think there was the last one in Kanyezi Foundation, but the department indicated that it really doesn't deal with with any technical processes relating to the bill, and it just speaks very general. Is that it, Advocate Bossoff?
Yeah, there's that one, and then obviously there's also another one, because we've got two that was handed out yesterday of Mr. Justice Malakazi, which in fact he is very complimentary towards the approach taken in the three bills, and he supports many of the issues. We couldn't find anything of substance that he actually objected to. So, Chair, there's not really anything to report.
Members, that brings us to the departmental responses of the submissions. We have a situation where we next week will have to consider, and then obviously also then must deal with that particular area as identified by our committee. And if needs be, and then the department obviously needs to redraft in the image of some of the recommendations. That already still the same, but I think then you would know best how you normally do it. I think you just then highlight what's suggested in the same piece of draft. Am I right? That's the way you normally do it.
What we will propose is the so-called the ABLE, or a draft ABLE, for consideration by the committee on those two aspects that has been identified. Okay. And if there's been any other issues identified during the next discussion, we will obviously incorporate it into that ABLE, and we will do it in conjunction with the state law advisors.
Yeah, and if you also can already give us a sense, even next week, of if we are in fact, A, basically agreeing with that amendment when it comes to the adult education, if we do not agree, meaning what, for example, is the considerations in there, and if we leave it as is and then park the bigger discussion. So I think it would be good to just have a synopsis of the different perspectives on that. You'll obviously also ask parliamentary legal advisor to just give us a sense of that from our side now.
Chair, I've already quickly whispered in my colleagues here the need that we need a formal advice from the state law advisors on that specific aspect, and he agreed to that, Chair. So his office will assist the committee in a formal advice in that respect.
Yeah, but that means we are going to get advice from the government side, and we actually need our advice from a more parliamentary perspective, because I think the parliamentary advisor, Member Kubai, I'm just saying that the parliamentary, the issue that you've raised, obviously we need to take a course action next week in terms of how we proceed. But clearly there's options in that, and we need to know from a legal perspective what is the options. I think there's a sentiment from us. So what is the implication if we execute that sentiment, and in what way? Advocate Bossoff suggests that they are also going to reflect on that and ask the state law advisor. However, I did indicate that from a parliamentary perspective, and that we obviously need a independent, from our side, a perspective on it. So that it's not that we, in a sense, because there's a sentiment here, and we need to see how we protect that sentiment, and not necessarily from the government side in this case. So we'll then get that from our legal advice in Parliament, Secretary. The members, we then came to the end of it. We've got a suggested way forward, and hopefully we'll be able to get through these processes in the way we identified it up front. That's it. There's nothing else on the agenda. Yeah, no. Anneli feels very strongly that I must raise the issue of the summit. I thought we've raised it a few times already. But I think there's a maximum of 5 people. And there's 2 individuals from the opposition, and then four from the ANC. There are members that stayed in Gauteng that we would want to suggest that there was a suggestion, not from the department side, but more from the side, I think, of Parliament, asking us just in terms of cost saving, that there's a number given. So our advice is where members are in Gauteng, that obviously they don't need to sleep at the hotel, and that take away that level of cost. But there is a summit this week, and there's a summit next week, and we urge our members, and the secretary is liaising with the relevant people. I'm also hearing members that the select committee was also, in fact, the letter has gone off from the secretary to the select committee. There was a bit of a misunderstanding yesterday about that. To Advocate Basif and the team, thanks so much for being with us the last 2 days. It really helped. Thank you, members.